Welcome back to another episode of Spilling Labrador Tea Under Cedar Trees with Kate and Matt.
Hello, welcome back.
Hello.
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 Yeah, so it's another episode for season 3 of Spilling Tea. And we have, like, the season's not going to be the most lighthearted, so obviously mm-hmm. we're still going to have the odd one where it's not the most enjoyable to listen to, but today's we don't have a guest. It's just the two of us that are going to be chatting. And we thought it would be important to give a little bit more of a timeline in regards to the child welfare system in Canada, just to have like a better understanding of like where things started and kind of where things are at right now.
Yeah, a little bit more of a background since we had two guests already. That also kind of set the stage. It's a little bit more of a stage setting for our further conversations.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I imagine that a lot of people have heard that Bill C-92 has been put in place. And it was a conversation piece that came up between Kate and I one morning. Like, we basically turned around and I was like, we should probably cover... include this in the timeline part and maybe make it sooner than I think we had originally planned in some fashion, just because like it's relevant for what's going on right now. So yeah, I guess we'll just get into it.
Totally.
Okay. So from 18, so also shout out to Hillary, because Hillary is the real MVP here. We were like, can you look up timeline information? And so she put everything together for timeline. And if anyone wants resources as well, you can reach out to us, or we'll find a way to be able to make these accessible for everyone if people are interested in that.
Yeah, we can post the links in our page description, episode description. And also remember, everybody, like, we're not legal scholars.
No.
God, no. Or historians. No. So... we have the most accurate information as possible.
For a Google search.
Yes.
to a degree. Yeah, so I'm not saying take everything with a grain of salt, per se, but if there seems to be gaps or if there's any missing information that just didn't come across when research was happening. And obviously, we'll be talking with other people that maybe have a little bit better understanding and background in it later on. So hopefully we'll be able to cover the rest if we've missed anything. But yeah, so we're just going to go over some key dates and what aligns with it. So this is going to be more of a reading voice from me versus a conversation. just a heads up. So from 1831 to 1996 is obviously a well-known timeline, in the sense of like that's when the Indigenous children are forced to attend residential schools. And so that's a pretty broad timeline, but there's some stuff that was broken down inside of it as well. So 1876, the Proclamation of the Indian Act was obviously set about, giving the federal government control over most aspects of Indigenous people's lives. Move forward to 1920, school attendance at residential schools was made mandatory. Moving forward to 1951, the Indian Act amended, giving the provinces control over child welfare laws, and this triggered the 60 scoop. The 60 scoop went from obviously the early 50s all the way until about the 80s, I believe, is where that goes.
Sorry to interrupt your reading voice. Do you know what year your mom was adopted?
75.
Nice. I think my dad...
my mom was, I think, 3 months old, so...
and my dad was around there, too, and he was about 4.
But we've met somebody that also, I think more recently, she's Inuit. And she also had mentioned that she was part of 60 Scoop. And that was more around the early 80s, I believe. Yeah. So it's a very, as much as it says 60 Scoop, I think it's because like the largest apprehension happened in the 60s. But it happened from like the 50s all the way until the 80s. So despite the name, that's kind of the timeline for that. So in 2007, First Nations Child and Family Caring Society and the Assembly of First Nations filed a complaint pursuant to the Canadian Human Rights Commission, alleging that the federal government, as represented by the Ministry of Indian and Northern Affairs, racially discriminates against First Nations children by providing less child welfare benefit on reserves. Which, in some capacity, like, was still pretty much accurate up until more recently. In 2016, Indigenous youth make up have made up more than 50% of children in foster care, despite being only 8% of that age group. The 60 scoop repeats it, like repeated itself into the 2010s as the Millennium Scoop. So yeah, so basically once you hit, like, I would say the later 80s, early 90s up until 2010s, there was still a lot of apprehension of Indigenous children and youth, and they were considered part of the Millennium Scoop, which I also know a handful of people impacted by that. And it was wild that people were like, oh, it's not happening anymore. And you're like, no, like, it's still, they've just changed it, like, made it look different, called it something else. Like,
yeah.
But it's still all the same stuff. But yeah. And then that, in some sense, brings us to June of 2019, which Kate will touch on in just a second. But I just wanted to, like, refer back to, like, I know that there, I don't have the exact information, but I know, like, there has been, obviously, day school survivor claims have gone through, so people could get support through that. Residential school survivor, like, a lot of class actions have happened against the government. And I think, because, like, I remember we had talked about it at one point, but, like, the there was, like, a 60 scoop action. And then I think more recently it was also a Millennium Scoop as well. But it's, that one was less heard about, because, like, I didn't even know about it until someone I knew was like, oh yeah, like, I'm applying for it. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know that was going on. Like, 60 scoop I heard about,
yeah,
that the that they were doing claims, but I didn't hear anything about the Millennium Scoop one.
And if I remember correctly, and, like, claims for the 60 scoop closed in either 2020 or 2021.
So, like, almost all of this has only just been dealt with, or is being begun being dealt with just now. And, like, this is, like, so many years later. Like, and so many people have lost their lives and without having any support, and
not knowing who their family is.
Like, right? And yeah, just so much lost time for so many people. And so much healing that, like, could have been ongoing for a lot longer. But yeah. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts mostly go to, like, a structural thing of, like, okay, yes, class action suits are good and they're in, and what does that look like after? Right. And, like, obviously with this bill that came out has remedied a lot of harm that has been done. And what are the tools that nations can use in order to enforce their jurisdiction?
Yeah.
Is what I wonder. Basically just, like, more legal questions I have about how it can actually be implemented in a good way. And, like, in a sustainable way. Still waiting for that phone call, Miguel. Yeah, more of the execution of the jurisdiction, which I think is all interesting. Like, it's not bad things. They're interesting things.
And, but that also goes into the fact that, like, where, like, because I know that there are some nations that have done, like, already have started doing the research and have, like, had, like, the community meetings and gatherings to, like, talk about jurisdiction and what that would look like and, like, how that ties to, like, culturally, how they would deal with situations like this, and their own systems and laws in regards to that. But not all nations have had opportunities for the same funding or the same amount of, like, support to be able to do that research and, like, do that that process building. So I think there's going to be there's a need for more support in like either by funds or just by like the federal government in general to be mm-hmm. supporting these nations of being like, well, now you're allowed to have jurisdiction, but then they're not like, where's the follow through of like mm-hmm. providing
the infrastructure?
Yeah, in order to for that to be sustainable for themselves, which is kind of where my job comes into play. But chill, it's one of those things where like it's exciting work, but then there's still so much more that needs to be done. Yeah. In order for things to be actionable, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tell us about Bill C-92's timeline.
With pleasure. I got to nerd out so hard this afternoon.
The way that she sent me three separate... So she sent me one article to read. And I read it, and then I kind of, like, I was grumbling about Quebec. And then she sent me two other ones, but, like, just, like, the legal jargon, and it was so dry.
I sent you the court case. Interested.
She sent me the court case, and as soon as I started reading it, I was like, this is, like, a memo, and I don't want to read it. Like, driest thing. I was like, I understand this is really important work, and it's really, like, good shit, but my poor eyes. My brain was like, we're not doing this. She'll tell me about it.
It's completely valid. Yeah. I haven't got to use my bachelor degree in so long. and I was like, oh my gosh, Canali, how could I have forgotten about you?
The way she's like, I get to read Canali. And I was like, what is, like, Canali? What are you talking about? Like, I don't know.
You're like, what does that have anything to do with the Italians? It is the free, like, case referencing database for folks. You can go and you punch in the kind of case you're looking for or the citation, and it brings you either, like, articles to do so or the court cases themselves, and they're for each province as well as the federal government. I had to get a chance to read the Supreme Court decision, like, and it's the whole thing because I had other things to do today, but I definitely read the Canali. I definitely had the time of my life.
What yeah. a sentence.
I know. It's very... Hey, you know what? It takes all kinds. So in 2019, Bill C... I almost said C-31. That's so funny. Bill C-92. An act respecting First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children, youth, and families became into law, recognizing Indigenous people's jurisdiction over child and family services, and recognizes jurisdiction addressing over-representation of Indigenous children and youth in the child welfare system. And as we all know, that Quebec made a challenge for it, and the Supreme Court upheld it. So, like, that's, like, the cliff note, and I'm going to get a little nerdy, and I'll do my best, A, not to talk fast, and B, to actually use words that make sense for everybody.
Accessibility is key.
I know, it's the whole thing why we started doing this podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. So the act was an attempt by Parliament to honor its obligations signed by UNDRIP as well as the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Prior to this act, teacher already touched on it, the provinces were responsible for the child welfare system. And then the act affirms the inherent right of self-determination of Indigenous groups and has the backing of the federal law for it to be exercised, and as well has a minimum standards requirement, which includes the best interests of the child, cultural continuity, and substantive equity. The last part is a little up for interpretation, and I think that it would be good if people were to flesh that out, but of course that's for nations to determine what that looks like. Mm-hmm. So over 50 Indigenous governing bodies have created and executed legislation under this act, and then the Quebec challenge. Quebec argued that the act was unconstitutional and was overstepping provincial jurisdiction. And the Quebec Court of Appeal found that it was fine under the Canadian Constitution, like it wasn't overstepping. And then they found that, I'm also trying to read my own handwriting and it's really bad, but it did make it to the Supreme Court, obviously. And the two questions that they were looking at was whether or not Parliament was overstepping, as well as if they were trying to restructure the quote-unquote architecture of the Canadian Constitution. The court found that as a whole, the Act focused on the protection, the well-being of Indigenous families, children, and services. In doing so, obviously, move forward reconciliation. And then the court also backed Parliament in the jurisdiction to make laws under the relation of two areas, quote, Indians and, quote, land reserved for the Indians. And so that's why Quebec's challenge did not stand up, because it completely fell within the Constitution and under Section 35 with Indigenous self-determination. Very, very interesting. That's the first thing she said. And I was like, well, they're trying to see, like, if it overstepped, like, constitutional powers.
I understand where they're coming from. Yeah. I do understand, like, the point that they were trying to make. It just came across as bitchy to me.
Yeah, that's completely fair.
And the idea of, like, it's just giving more self-determination and mm-hmm. power to Indigenous groups versus, like, taking away that complete right from the province in general. Like, mm-hmm. it's like, the province still has the determination on how the child welfare system works for mm-hmm. everybody else involved that lives in Quebec. Like, it's just a small group that gets to finally make those decisions for themselves and help to, one, like, preventative measures, yep. because, like, there's more supports that can be put in place to do, like, support before children have to be, like, mm-hmm. any apprehension has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And just trying to make sure, like, children are get to stay within their communities and still get to be a part of their culture and still have connection to family. Like, they can be taken out of situations if they are unsafe and, like, are not, you know, ideal, and be placed with another family member or, like, yep. with a community member, like, so they can still have contact with family. Like, yep. there's so many more benefits to that happening versus, like, Quebec losing a little bit of control over provincial decisions that they get to make. Like,
completely. And also, like, recognizing, like, the strain on the child welfare yeah. system
yeah.
and family services, and them not seeing it as a benefit to the ministry as well as to nations is a little beyond me. And, like, I do understand, like, the constitutional challenge. I think it's yeah. like, it's good that we do have constitutional challenges. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you of, like, what was the real motive behind them having to file for one, you know?
Yeah.
But however, the Supreme Court said, good try.
Yeah.
Good game. Yeah. However, we're going with Indigenous sovereignty on this one, which is a very, very large and very exciting, and can only be referenced and built further upon in other case law.
Right. As Hillary put a sentence in, could this set precedent for future decisions? Which I think is amazing, because, like, there is a lot of, like, work coming up and, like, push for more Indigenous sovereignty
mm-hmm.
In lots of different capacities, right? And if they're going to follow through on UNDRIP for this one thing, that means, like, there's an opportunity for them to follow through on a lot more.
Totally.
Which is really exciting, but also it's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be challenging, but
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people have the motivation and